Right now, it's a short jump to get to David Terechuk and the Media Beat. Of course, David joins us live on a Friday morning. You can find him, of course, with his own website, themediabeat.us, also posting Huffington Post. He also is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And all I can think is he must be having a grand old time sitting back in his rocking chair and his computer in hand, looking at what's going on in Washington, D.C. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you.
Why Washington? He should presumably be paying attention to where he was born.
No, but it's too much fun to watch.
I can't decide which country to
exactly
to consider the demise of more, my current adopted country or my country of origin.
Well,
government in both countries seems to be in a state of total chaos.
But I'll tell you, the United States jumped back into the lead, I think, with the tit for tat going on between Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump. I think that
the spitefulness and the vindictiveness of America is outstripping the Brits at the moment. That's true.
Well, only because of the way it's being covered.
Oh, I don't know. The primary sources are pretty spiteful and vindictive.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they aren't.
The letters from between Pelosi and Trump were strong in their own essence.
Excuse me. Once again, you misunderstood. It's not when I say the way it's being covered. There is nothing, you'll forgive me, bitchier than two British politicians trying to insult one another.
Well, that's true.
It just doesn't cover.
We have a long tradition of that, of
right.
course.
So you can't cover it the same way.
Including one of the priceless ones. Americans are very fond of quoting Churchill as an example of great parliamentary probity. He was the one who responded to Nancy Astor, his nemesis in the House of Parliament.
Oh, a woman.
In the House of Commons. A woman, of course, yes. Who really put him through it, usually in interruptions to his prime ministerial statements. For instance, once she appealed to the Speaker of the House, saying, "Mr. Speaker, the Right Honourable Gentleman," the formal and precise way of describing the person who was speaking, the aforesaid Winston Churchill. She said, "The Right Honourable Gentleman is horribly and disgustingly drunk." but then she had to give way, which means she has to sit down and let the Prime Minister respond. And he said, "Mr. Speaker, the Right Honourable Lady is horribly and disgustingly ugly. But the difference is, I shall be sober in the morning."
That's right. I have to say, I stole that Winston Churchill line many years ago when somebody came up to me that I had no idea of in a parking lot when I was 425 pounds and told me I was disgustingly fat. And I looked at him and I immediately thought of the Winston Churchill line and said, "Well, I may be fat, but you're ugly. I can lose weight. You can't lose ugly." I read this. That was having that Winston Churchill somewhere.
How Churchillian of you.
Back in my mind.
You just
somewhere.
Didn't say right on.
I did not say right on.
I posit this just because as we really watch low rent, poor Twitter.
It's pretty saddening.
Yeah. And that's the essence of what I was saying. Not that there's a competition between who's the lowest of the life forms. But for one sec, I would like to ask, because you explained to me off air a couple of weeks ago what the actual, the complexities of the Brexit situation.
Because I did? Oh, boy.
Well,
explain them to me.
All right, here's what you said, and here's what resonated, and then fix what I'm about to say.
Try me.
Okay. Instead of it being, black, white, either or, there are so many different striations in each of the parties. So there are Labour. It's not just that all Labour wants to do one thing and all the Conservatives want to do another. It's
far from it, yes.
But there's so much division within the parties themselves. And there are more than two, by the way. But
that, oh, there certainly are now, yes.
That it's difficult, she said. Understatedly.
It's all very difficult. Yes, you're right.
to create that consensus.
Uh-huh.
Is that...
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean...
what's what you said.
And you're also right, I forgive my intemperate reaction at the time, but you were right early on to say that there's a lot of it boils down to how the media is covering it, too. For instance, you're right about the Conservative Party and the Labour Party both having their own internal divisions over the Brexit issue as well as over many other things. but on the media side, The Sun, the Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid, the most popular newspaper in Britain, I have to say, pretty shamelessly populist in the increasingly negative sense of that word in the way it's used. But The Sun has had a whole page headline, which is essentially a graphic. It was a picture of a dodo, an extinct dodo bird, with the face of Theresa May superimposed on the head. It was a pretty striking image. And the headline, of course, was May's Brexit deal, dead as a dodo. this is the my point being that this is the conservative leaning, this conservative supporting Rupert Murdoch-owned Sun newspaper, sticking it to the conservative prime minister. And on the Labour side, not only in the Commons, in the House of Commons, but in the country as a whole, the Labour Party is just as divided as the internally strife-torn Conservative Party. And what that all adds up to, especially when you bring in, the other elements of the political matrix now in Britain, which is that the Northern Ireland right-wing, but certainly very religiously observant and extreme Protestant Democrat, so-called Democratic Unionist Party, it's a wonderful euphemism, that name, who are the descendants of, the present-day descendants of, political descendants of Dr. Ian Paisley, the Protestant extremist.
They are
part of the mix. They're an essential part of the mix because Theresa May has had to go into an alliance with them to maintain her majority in the House of Commons. So she's absolutely dependent on that outfield of a political party for her continuing existence in power.
And to interrupt, though my math might not be right, there are 10 of them. And not agreed to vote for the Conservative government, then wouldn't she not have lost that vote by 9?
Absolutely.
No, sorry, by 1.
But 9 votes would have been the what was in contention or what she'd have lost. And equally, you have a sizable slice of the seats in Parliament now owned by other parties from what English people call the regions and what people in those areas call countries. Scotland and Northern Ireland we're talking about. Scotland for sure and Wales for sure. It depends which side of the political argument you're on.
Right.
In Northern Ireland, whether you call it a country or a province. But you're part of a country or an entire self-sustaining province. But in Scotland, my old home country, the part of the British Isles that I come from, you have Scottish nationalism. And one of the effects is the whole Brexit mess up is that the Scots who voted in a referendum of their own in 2014, substantially, I mean, hovering around the either side of the 50-40 mark, to stay in union with Britain. We're not talking about European Union now. We're just talking about
the initial referendum.
Integrity of the British government, the United Kingdom itself. And what's happening now is that since they voted as an area of the British Isles almost wholeheartedly for staying in Europe, they didn't support Brexit at all. It's another argument now for the Scots to have their own second referendum, which would give them a second chance to say, oh, let's leave the English to whatever mess they're creating for themselves. We want independence, and once we have independence, we as a Scottish independent country will rejoin Europe. It is all an extraordinary panoply of confusion, and the essence of the problem as it stands now, as it did on the day after the Brexit vote in 2016, is exactly the same. That there is no consensus. You're quite right. There is no consensus about what to do with the result, that popular result. I mean, that result of a popular vote that said a majority of people in the British, in the United Kingdom wanted to leave. Well, yes, they may have wanted to leave, but they clearly had, and nobody leading them had at all either, a sense of what that vote actually meant. What does it mean to leave Europe? No one's got agreement on that, and there's no consensus even now, 2 years later.
You know, and what's interesting to me about there's no consensus, I remember the actual outright lies that were posted during the campaign, the Brexit campaign.
Oh, yes. Where's all that money that's going to come rushing back into the British coffers when they leave Europe?
And
for the health service and for all those other things.
And people thought they were so informed.
As you say, outright political lies. Yeah. Or at least, you know, vastly naive, delusional
right.
sense of what could happen.
And all that, and right now, that isn't being, I think what people have to investigate and look at in this country and in Europe, especially in England, is look at what led up to Brexit and look at the campaign for Brexit and look where you stand now and come up with an answer. I mean, now look in the United States. What Nancy Pelosi did was power play. Fine, that was done. The president of the United States could have taken an unbelievable high road and shut down Nancy Pelosi very simply by saying, you know, you're absolutely right. I'll do this year's State of the Union address from the White House. I'll televise it to the country from the White House. You're absolutely right. This is no time to test security. But that didn't happen. And the President of the United States has every right to say you can't have military transport. But does he have a right to do it when they're on the bus? That's, I mean, actually on the bus to go to the transport.
In the Air Force bus. That's the visual that makes it.
Yeah, we're all amused. It's horrible. We're all amused by it, but it is
right.
A
so, but that
form
being,
of vindictiveness
but
and pettiness,
I just look back to high school and I say to myself, you know,
Lindsey Graham had that word, sophomoric.
I used to do things that teachers found funny and amusing, but they used to come to me and they used to say, consider the ramifications and consider your options to display your emotions.
How old were you?
At the time, I was 17, yeah.
So that's the difference. You have people who are pushing
70 and 75 years old doing this. It's absolutely.
They learned it in school.
Childhood, yeah.
But, okay, well, so just back to Brexit for 1 second, because trying to turn this into a teachable moment gag. How does one cover it? Because I see is all react. You know, everything, total generalization, I apologize. But we've got people react meteorologically. The meteorologist says, oh, these models that they put up, that they're just forecasting tools 8 days in advance, says this. And people just react. There's no, it's almost like there's a shunt between the critical thinking, such as, oh, that's 8 days from now and it's a computer. It just becomes insta-fact.
Well, the wise old souls who, they're very old, some of them now, who guided me in my earlier days in journalism, would always urge upon me. And, you know, when I've been in positions of leadership in the media too, I've tried to pass that on to people who are working with me. It's you know, the most valuable time you can spend when you're confronted with a story you need to cover is probably the first half hour. And I was always urged just to stop, sit back, and think. You know, it was a joke when you said it earlier on, but the idea of me in a rocking chair is actually rather appealing. I want to just draw back a little and say, hey, what is the big picture here before I dive into the detail of this, you know, whatever latest kerfuffle there is that I suddenly have to respond to with some kind of shunt, as you say. And now I'm going to go pretty macro here, but one of the great comparisons to be made between the kerfuffle, the massive and continuing kerfuffle in the UK, and the massive and continuing kerfuffle here, most currently about the government shutdown, partial though it is that, you know, how did the question of how did we get here? In both cases, you know, the votes that ushered in this period of extraordinary chaos on both sides of the Atlantic was a pretty massive. I mean, not overwhelming. Certainly not more than a plurality, a substantial majority in both of our countries took an emotional decision to vote in a certain way. And, you know, in the end, it's all about immigration. It's all about foreigners. It's all about a wave of people somehow threatening our way of life. The same argument, not put as an argument very often, just there as a strum in the background. That's what caused this appalling tilt into chaotic and juvenile contestation all the time. And I don't think that's a bad thing just to hold on to and say, hey, that's what's behind all this. And so let's just rather than dwell. Well, we need to dwell on the details. I mean, that's what reporting is all about. But if you can't see the forest for the trees, that's because you're entirely tied up in the detail of the latest petty-minded contest that may have come up, like the current one here in the States.
Well, it's interesting. The New York Times, the Washington Post, all the major papers have been trying to reinvigorate themselves by covering what's going on in Washington. But still, I find the problem with what's going on in this country, and probably in England too, is that the news
nobody's
that,
covering what's going on anyplace else.
Well, no, the news that is coming out that they're covering is supplemented by social media. And when I say supplemented by social media, I mean overtaken by social media, because
dependent upon it in many instances. The story cycle, as it were, the thing that produces the desire for a quick shunt, as Jill was saying, is usually somebody's tweet.
Right, and people ought to know that, you know, just in terms of history, hey, kids, this is what brought us here to begin with, so if you really want to keep doing it,
but what happens
best of luck.
It starts off, it's almost like a tsunami. A tweet, a post in social media starts off as a little ripple somewhere out in the ocean. But by the time it reaches landfall, it has become a tidal wave, and not necessarily a tidal wave of accurate information. That's the amazing thing about it.
Well, almost by definition, it can't be. It just gathers volume and without any particular substance. Well, it has a substance of a crashing
it's
wave.
It's water, right. But
that's about all.
Right. No, that tsunami or avalanche or however you want to say it. And then people, again, they take their information from that. That's... What is very difficult for me is it's so clear from the different, let's call them networks or channels, that there's a partisan position that I don't find that I just don't instantly have the sense that I'm getting a reasonable assessment of what is or isn't going on. And that I find terribly frustrating. And it's playing out now in the beginning of the 2020 election, which, you know, seems a bit early, but hey. By people picking sides and whatnot. So that's.
Well, elections are about picking sides, but as you say, it's some time yet before we have to decide which lever to pull when we go into the voting booth. It's early days, and we're into this bipolar. Totally bipolar situation. For so many people, this is a black and white issue, and I'm afraid it does. You know, I may have been rhetorically overstating the point, but when I said it's all about immigration, I don't think I'm that far wrong. It's all about a rush of feeling to the head. Blood paces its way through the brain in a way that's not at all logical. But at the back of everything, you've got prejudice rather than the rationality determining how people react to just about everything that goes on now.
And I just want to throw out in this, we have to end, but let's not forget, while we just spent your entire time speaking about the U.S. and the U.K., let us not forget the Gilets Jaunes in France, because that's a whole other similar
sure.
problem.
Yeah. More violence at this moment. My home country, my original home country, my adopted home country, and my country of best resort.
Right.
And frequent resort. All roiling in the same way. You're right.
And Vladimir Putin sitting off on the side with a wry smile on his face.
Yeah, the bad boy. And this has been going on for so long, it's just ridiculous.
But he's getting everything
he just
wants.
Having the time of his young life, yeah.
It's like getting an ice cream sundae and getting an extra cherry on top. All right.
Oh, no, extra sauce. All right. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.